From December 1975 to January 1976, George and Kathy Lutz and their three children allegedly experienced a wide range of supernatural phenomenon that eventually drove them to abandon their home at 112 Ocean Avenue in the town of Amityville, Long Island, in New York. When they told their story to the public, it was captivating and became the subject for the 1977 bestseller The Amityville Horror by Jay Anson, in which the mysterious 28 days in which the Lutz family lived in that house are documented in great detail. Of course, the success of the book inevitably led to the 1979 horror film of the same name, which is the subject of today's Filmgasm. Now, before we get started, thank you very much for tuning in. My name is Connor Izagirre. I'm a massive film buff, and Filmgasm is a podcast where I talk about my favorite genre, horror, as well as weird Hollywood shit that piques my interest. If you'd like to see more from Filmgasm, feel free to visit Filmgasm.com. That's F-I-L-M-G-A-Z-M, where you can check out daily movie reviews, articles about movies, the newest trailers, and all of my early podcasts that I did with my partners before I started doing this solo, some of whom will be appearing as featured guests in the future. So stay tuned for that. So without further ado, let's talk Amityville. So before I get into the 1979 film and the many sequels and one remake, I want to touch just briefly on the true story behind the film and the book. Amityville is one of the most famous hauntings in history for a reason. Mainly, you know, because of how well documented it is. I don't know if it's true, I don't know if it's bullshit. I tend to believe in a lot of the supernatural, but then again, you know, there's usually an angle. Regardless of how you spin it, a lot of horrifying shit happened in that house. 112 Ocean Avenue has seen some dark days, beginning with the murder of the DeFeo family in 1974, which is, according to the book and the film, where a lot of this dark energy comes from. In 74, Ronald DeFeo took a .35 caliber rifle and shot and killed both his parents, his two sisters, and his two brothers. He then walked to his favorite bar and claimed that somebody murdered his family. When the police investigated and DeFeo's alibi didn't quite hold up, he began to change his story several times, and then he was arrested and charged with 6 counts of murder after finally confessing. He's still in prison, serving 6 consecutive life sentences, and I hope he burns in hell, because he is unrepentant and just a complete piece of shit. He claims that voices in his head made him do it, but more than likely, it was insurance money that did it. He was known for pulling scams, and just in any interviews footage that he's seen in before the murders, he just seems like a greasy son of a bitch. And, like, even so, the murders of his family, there are some discrepancies, some weird shit. Like, mainly, there was no struggle. Like, every victim died in their sleep from a single shot. Nobody woke up. Nobody struggled, despite DeFeo reloading the weapon at least once. And that's really weird. Like, why didn't anybody wake up? Why didn't any of the neighbors hear this? It's, you know, it's gunshots in a small neighborhood. You'd think 6 gunshots. Somebody in that house should have woken up, and there was no drugs in their system. I don't know. That part just rubs me the wrong way. I don't know. But a year after the murders, the Lutz family moved in, and shit got spooky really fast. From day one, they were seeing weird shit they could not explain, allegedly. I gotta say that. The Lutz family stayed in the Amityville house for just 28 days before abandoning it along with everything they owned, which to me proves they at least believe something happened there. I don't know if it's true, but they believe it. You know, to quote George Costanza, it's not a lie if you believe it. They also passed a polygraph test, which doesn't necessarily mean anything, but I do think it's worth mentioning. I won't talk too much about what the Lutz family claimed happened, because this podcast is mainly focusing on the film. But some of the more creepy events that they experienced include their daughter Missy's imaginary friend Jody, who was a pig with red eyes. Big red flag there. If your kid starts talking to an imaginary friend in your new house, you get the hell out of there, because that's not ending well. Mother Kathy, repeatedly levitating above the bed, several times. You'd think after just once, you know, that's it, get the hell out. I walk into my house, I see somebody floating, I'm calling the Ghostbusters. That's the end of it. How do you live, continue to live in this house after seeing something like that? If you know, that's what happened. Creepy, very creepy one. Local priest, Father Mancuso, would become increasingly ill every time he would speak on the phone to the Lutz family. If he could get through to them, there was a lot of issues with the phones, and every time he talked to them, he would get, like, weird stigmata wounds on his hands, and he would get this horrible fever and a flu. And then, when he came to bless the house, when they moved in, he heard a very audible, "Get out!" Just like that. Super creepy. That would scare the shit out of me if I heard "Get out!" when I walked into a house, and there's nobody in there. Jesus Christ. That event is actually one of the scarier scenes of the film. What else happened? George Lutz, the dad, he woke up every morning at 3:15 a.m., which was the supposed time that the DeFeo murders took place. Creepy. Kind of a weird... If this was made up, that's a little weird thing to throw in there. And then when George allegedly tried to take matters into his own hands and tried to cast the spirits out himself, the incidents only increased. He basically pissed it off. And eventually they just took off. Which, again, you know, frankly, they should have done the first time they saw someone floating above the bed. I'm not getting past that. That blows my mind. So after they took off and told their story, a number of paranormal investigators flocked to their home because, you know, everybody wanted to check out this creepy home. And some of the more famous ones included demonologists Ed and Lorraine Warren, whose infamous cases were the basis for the successful Conjuring franchise. Expect a raging filmgasm on that franchise in the near future. And the Warrens' involvement with Amityville was actually a subplot of The Conjuring 2, and one of my favorite parts of that film. But the Warrens supposedly were the ones who cast out whatever was in the house at 112 Ocean Avenue. And the Lutz family remains the only homeowners to have experienced something strange in that house, as the current owner bought the place in February 2017 for $200,000 under the asking price, which is pretty good. But, side note, could you imagine watching the Amityville Horror in that house? Like, even if you don't believe in ghosts at all, that's gotta scare you a little bit. That's gotta be weird. You're watching a movie about a famous haunting that occurred in the house you are currently sitting in. That you're going to see shadows. You're going to start hearing creaks. That nobody would get over that shit. Even if you're watching like the shittiest sequel, it's still that house, and that's unnerving. So the Lutz family's experiences were recorded in the 1977 book by Jay Anson, The Amityville Horror, which I did read in preparation for this podcast. Great read, super creepy, and actually made me appreciate the film even more. The 1979 film, The Amityville Horror, was directed by Stuart Rosenberg, director of Cool Hand Luke, and stars James Brolin as George Lutz, Margot Kidder as Kathy Lutz, and Rod Steiger as Father Delaney, changed from Mancuso in the book. For no apparent reason, maybe the priest just didn't want his name associated with this, if Mancuso is even his real name. From the book. The movie's exceedingly creepy, made more so by the mere possibility that this might have actually happened. There's a very good chance it's all bullshit. But if you're being honest with yourself, would you ever spend a night in that house? I mean, seriously. No, you wouldn't. Nobody would. Well, unless you live there. In which case, props. The film is a massive success, bringing in $86 million on a $4.7 million budget. Hugely successful for a relatively independent horror film, and it spawned a long-lasting horror franchise that continues to this day, despite nobody really giving a shit, and most of the sequels being either TV movies or direct-to-video. And I haven't seen any of those sequels, But you know what? I have them written down here, so I'm going to list them all out for you and give you kind of a loose plot summary, or not summary, but like a, you know, plot line based on IMDb. So, 1979 was the Amityville Horror, decent horror flick. 1982, Amityville 2, The Possession, where a new family moves into the house and their son is possessed by a demon. Pretty standard stuff. 1983, Amityville 3D. You know a movie's going to be just popping when they throw 3D on it. I mean, look no further than Jaws 3D, the best of the franchise. I'm fucking with you. That movie's terrible. Anytime they throw 3D onto a movie, I just immediately think it's going to be shit. And 9 times out of 10, I'm right. I mean, off the top of my head, Friday the 13th, 3D, Journey to the Center of the Earth, 3D, Spy Kids, 3D, Game Over. Just 3D fucks up a movie because there's no focus on plot. It's just shit flying at you. Anyway, Amityville 3D, a skeptical reporter moves into the house, and turns out he was wrong. Ghosts are real. 1989, Amityville, The Evil Escapes, TV movie, where the demonic presence escapes the house through a magic lamp. Seriously, that's what IMDb said. Apparently, the demon presence in Amityville house may also be a genie. And it hitches a ride to California, where it haunts a mansion. Clearly, they are reaching for ideas at part 4, and there are still a lot to go. 1990, The Amityville Curse. Direct-to-video, the real curse of this franchise. The rest of these are pretty much direct-to-video, almost exclusively. And the plot is basically the same as The Haunting. 5 people spend the night in the Amityville house on a dare, and shit goes sideways. 1992, this has the best title. Amityville 1992, It's About Time. That's ballsy. Like, everyone's looking forward to this. Like, this is some landmark film. Maybe 5 people watch this. Basically, a guy brings home a clock from the Amityville house, and I think you can guess what happens next, because all the shit that's in there is haunted too. So if you grab something from there, you're basically inviting the demon into your house through the clock. It's about time. Amityville 1992. It's such a dick move. I don't know why that bothers me so much. Next up, 1993, Amityville, A New Generation. There's another trend in horror I noticed. You throw new generation or next generation onto something, it's typically not going to be as revolutionary as you're expecting it to. Look no further than Texas Chainsaw, The Next Generation, for evidence on that. And this movie has the same plot as the last one, except it's a mirror this time, not a clock. Very original. Also, still direct-to-video. 1996, Amityville Dollhouse. Another direct-to-video. A girl gets a dollhouse that looks like the Amityville house, and it's also haunted. Come on. Seriously, you're not even going to make it from the Amityville house. It just is a replica, and it's haunted, too. Can you just, if I build one out of Play-Doh, is that going to be haunted, too? How far are you going to stretch this? Ugh. Then there was the 2005 remake starring Ryan Reynolds as George Lutz, Melissa George as Kathy Lutz, and Philip Baker Hall as Father Calloway. Still not Mancuso. Don't know what's up with that. And a young Chloe Grace Moretz as one of the Lutz children. I haven't seen this. I figure it follows the same plot as the original story. And I'll get to it eventually. It's probably the only one of these movies I actually wouldn't mind taking a look at. And finally, 2017's Amityville The Awakening, which stars Jennifer Jason Leigh and Bella Thorne. A single mother moves into the Amityville house to try and use its dark powers to cure her comatose son. Surprisingly, shit goes south, because why would that happen? Why would you go to a famously haunted, dark place and expect it to suddenly be like an angel and save somebody. That's stupid. And surprisingly enough, none of these movies was anywhere near as successful as the original film, including the remake, which was also a bomb. Because there's only so much you can do with a story like this. Haunted house, family got scared, family got out. That's kind of it. There's not really a lot to it. It's a creepy story, yeah, but is it worth 10 movies? No, it's not. And that's how many came out of this. 10 movies from this crazy, probably bullshit, definitely creepy story of a house in Amityville, Long Island. And hell, because of this franchise, the name of the town is now synonymous with horror itself. You hear the name Amityville, you get, it's a freaky name now because of this movie. I kind of feel bad for the people who live in Amityville because it's probably a nice suburb just with this one house that has a past. And, you know, that's quite an accomplishment for the name of your town to have a dark connotation where people immediately associate it with a famous horror film. Not a lot of towns can do that. Off the top of my head, you know, Silent Hill, Castle Rock, Haddonfield, Crystal Lake, Derry, Salem's Lot, pretty much any town Stephen King ever used, came up with, and Amityville. Just, yeah, it's up there. Amity Island is another one. Something about Amity just creeps people out. It's too friendly. Alright, time for some filmgasm facts. It's probably going to be a quick one. There's not really a lot here. So IMDb filled with weird trivia and fun facts about every film ever made. So in this segment, I seek out the ones I think are the funniest, weirdest, or just plain bizarre. And I only got three with this one. Not a lot of filmgasm facts. The trivia page on IMDb is kind of bare for the Amityville Horror. Number one. For years, rumors have circulated that the movie was to be filmed in the actual house in Amityville, but the production team was too frightened to film inside the house. The reality is the town of Amityville denied American International Pictures permission to film any scenes whatsoever in Amityville in an attempt to distance themselves from any publicity. Which, look, if your town's going to be associated with one of the most infamous hauntings in history, own that shit, you know, rake in the tourist dollars. You know, make Amityville Museum, Amityville, you know, gazebo at the park, make a dollhouse. You know, that'd be good for the economy. It's not, you know, you're not celebrating the DeFeo murders. That'd be fucked up. But you are celebrating a haunting that probably didn't happen. There's nothing wrong with that. Number two. Due to all the unwanted fame the book and film had brought upon the real house in Amityville, the current owners have replaced the evil eyes windows with normal rectangle-shaped windows. That's funny. So the house of Amityville, look it up. It looks creepy, or at least it did look creepy. The back windows on the second floor have kind of an eye look to them, like they're kind of glaring at you. And I think that's a big reason, or a big part of why it's so creepy. You know, the house looks like it's alive. And I guess they got tired of people, you know, taking pictures of their house, so they replaced them with regular windows. And finally, number three, in 1979, attorney William Weber filed a lawsuit against George Lutz and Kathy Lutz, charging them with fraud and breach of contract. He alleged that they reneged on an agreement to collaborate with Weber on the book and the movie. In an interview with the Associated Press, Weber admitted that he and the Lutzes had concocted the horror story scam, quote, over many bottles of wine. William Weber, by the way, is Ronald DeFeo's defense attorney. That's fucked up, you know? I mean, if this is true, George and Kathy Lutz, you know, abandoned their house in order to concoct a horror story scam with the lawyer who represented Ronald DeFeo, the guy who murdered his family. Well, I don't see... That doesn't make any sense. Is that true? I hope that's not true. That's really fucked up if that's true. I don't know. There's so many weird holes in this story that I don't know if it's all true, but I think that some of it might have been true. I think there was definitely a feeling You know, shit got weird. I mean, they did abandon the place. So, who knows? Everyone who, according to the book at least, everyone who went in there got really unnerved, really creeped out, and saw stuff. Something. And, you know, I don't know. I wasn't there. I can't tell you what happened. So that's the Amityville Horror. Believe or don't believe, one thing you can't argue is that it's creepy. The story is creepy. And if it is made up, it's these guys have quite an imagination for a guy who basically ran a construction site or a construction team or something. Whether or not it happened is irrelevant at this point, since the story has pretty much become a piece of the larger, ever-growing pop culture puzzle. You know, it's its own entity now. Whether or not it happened matters not. So, for my final 1 out of 10 score, which I do every time I watch a movie and review it on filmgasm.com, I think I'm going to stick with my original score of 7 out of 10, which I did give when I reviewed this movie back in 2016. I hadn't read the book yet, so I judged the movie kind of harshly, admittedly, but I stand by my score because in the end, there are better ghost movies, and this one has coasted through because of the true story connection. It's good, it's not great. The performances kind of leave a lot to be desired. It ends abruptly, but that's really only because the story itself ended abruptly. You know, they just got the hell out of there. They got out a little too late after seeing some really creepy shit that the kids admit scarred them for life. But they got out. And, you know, now it's its own thing. Now it's the Amityville franchise. I wonder if they get a piece of that. They've got to, right? A piece of that very small Amityville pie that doesn't really fill you up as much as it used to. I'm sure they get a piece. You know, it's got to be in their contract. Some kind of residual. Well, thanks for listening. If you want to see more from Filmgasm, you can check out my YouTube channel for weekly videos every Wednesday, as well as my website, filmgasm.com, and my social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, for updates on reviews, podcast articles, any sort of cool movie news or trailers I feel like mentioning. Most recently, Game of Thrones Season 8 trailer dropped. Holy shit, can't wait, so excited. Earlier today, I saw Captain Marvel, recently released. I'm recording this on Friday, March 8th, and it was good. It wasn't great, but it was good. It was entertaining. I think it was way better than a lot of the audience on Rotten Tomatoes seems to think. 49% last I looked. That's pretty damn low. I remember reading somewhere that some people were using bots to try and lower the movie's score before the movie came out, and that's fucked up. I mean, why would you do that? What do you get out of that? Let the movie exist on its own merits. Let it prove itself. You know, if you're just fucking it up before anybody gets to see it, what are you? You're nothing. You're worthless. You're just a troll who enjoys fucking up people's fun, and there's no place for you in this world. Go away. Good news. This podcast is now available for free download on iTunes. Woo! I'm very excited, and I hope this helps build an audience for this podcast. I love doing it, and I'm going to keep doing it whether anyone listens or not, but it's way more fun if somebody's listening. If you have anything you'd like to say, feel free to email me at filmgasm@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment in the YouTube section, or a review on iTunes would be amazing. That would really help us out. Thanks to Austin Johnson and Kayla Leger for keeping the site fully stocked with reviews and articles. And stay tuned next Wednesday for another hardcore, toe-curlingly strong Filmgasm. Till next time.